Hi, this is Leonard Peikoff here to apply Ayn Rand's philosophy of objectivism to your real-life questions. My responses cover subjects of general interest, such as human relationships, career, and morality, but not current politics. For the present, my answers are posted every other week on Mondays, and Dr. Yaron Brook answers questions on current events on the alternate Mondays. You can listen to full episodes on iTunes or listen to single questions or full episodes on my website. Several years of podcasts are now easily searchable by topic or keywords. If you have a philosophical question to ask, simply go to www.peikoff.com, and that's spelled P as in Peter, E-I-K-O-F-F, like the word off at the end, peikoff.com. And of course, feel free to follow me on Facebook and Twitter. In all your years teaching philosophy, did you ever use multiple choice questions? Do you think they are ever proper for teaching philosophy? I don't think they are, because to really understand philosophy requires real research, writing, and rewriting on the part of the student. Well, I entirely agree that they are inappropriate and wrong for grading philosophy or for teaching it. And having said that, yes, there was one year when I first started teaching, the very first year when I taught full-time, it was back in the 60s sometime. I was teaching at a small college in New Jersey, and the grades were done by machine. So I had 160 people in that particular course. And I was assigned, you know, the computer assigns your grading time. I was assigned to give the exam on Thursday and hand the grades in on Friday. So I thought 160 papers and I have to do it overnight, that is utterly impossible. So the only thing I could do was multiple choice questions. And therefore, I wrote it off as ridiculous and gave the grades on the basis of the midterm, which I had graded, and ignored the final altogether. But the fun part, believe it or not, was making up multiple choice questions, because I made up totally ridiculous questions sarcastically, and a lot of the students were taken in by them. Here, for instance, I recall, do you know Credo Quia Absurdum? Is Tertullian, one of the fathers of the church. That's Latin, and it means, I believe it because it's absurd. In other words, I'm not trying to say that Christianity is legitimate or is rational. It's absurd, and that's why I believe it. Credo Quia Absurdum. But I, in a multiple choice, put down this one. When Tertullian said credo quia absurdum, he meant that the creed of queens is absurd, therefore showing that he was against monarchy. And I had a fair percent of the class thought, yeah, credo, creed, quia, instead of being because, became queens, because it sounded like that. And then just one more, I gave on Descartes, cogito ergo sum, which means, you know, I think, therefore I am, cogito ergo sum. And I said it true or false, when Descartes said cogito ergo sum, he was a precursor of the attempts to apply mathematics to nature, because his statement meant the sum of all cogitations must be measured in ergs. Now, of course, it's just the sound, you know. But again, I got a lot of people. In fact, I found very little correlation between what a student did in essay graded by me in the midterm and in picking out multiple choice questions. They say that to do multiple choice, the first thing you have to do is not think. You have to jump in and put down whatever you think is the right answer first, because any further thought will simply confuse you. And I think that's what people do. So it is a horrendous, I don't know, maybe in some sub-part of some sub-science, it would help with the periodic table or something, but it is a disaster in philosophy, and I never did it again. In fact, I left that school after that year. Now, here's one. Should there always be informed verbal consent between two people engaging in sexual activities? If so, does that still hold if a woman is highly intoxicated or if two people have a connection like Rourke and Dominique? Well, just if a woman is highly intoxicated, do you think there's much value in say, Jill, we're going to bed now, what do you think? I mean, if she's able to evaluate, that's one thing. But if you say highly intoxicated, there's no use talking to her. Now, if you say if two people have a connection like Rourke and Dominique, should there be informed verbal consent? Well, what do you think their relation is? They don't put it in words, but they know it. They know it 100%, and we know that from all the rest of the evidence. Just imagine the scene where they first sleep together, and you know the whole thing is the silence and the looking at each other and the underscoring of what it means to each. What would it be like if Ayn Rand had written as Rourke came in, you know, dressed as a workman, and Dominique had the perfume and the gown, and he said, I would like to sleep with you. How do you feel about it? I mean, that would be the end. If you have a passion and it's clear that the other person does, then you certainly destroy it by talking about it, by having to put it in words, because then the implication is you don't know what the other person's opinion is or a viewpoint is. And if you don't know, you better get to know the person a lot better. And I think you'll find if you do, you do not have to have verbal consent. Now, this idea of verbal consent is a feminist political correctness. The whole idea is males are evil and they rape women. So we're going to get around that by the man has to say to the woman, is this okay? But it doesn't help, of course, because the man says he did say it and the woman said he doesn't. And in the Ivy League today, a woman's testimony counts and a man's does not. So he's lost no matter what he does, unless he's gay. Then everything goes. But certainly informed verbal consent is absolutely unnecessary if you're talking outside the context of the Ivy League political correctness. It's bizarre, ridiculous. Is probably the greatest contraceptive there are, because by the time they've discussed it, they're not that interested or they feel awkward. Or then the question comes up, he says, do I get your informed consent? And she says, yes, but I'd like to make a note of how far it goes. You can touch me up to the elbow, but not inside the armpit. And you can touch me outside the blouse, but not above the belly button, etc., etc. You have to have, and they do this. Their consent can't be just yes or no blanket. If you're letting this beast, the man, at you, you have to have, you know, the specification. What can you do? How long can you do it? Etc., etc. It simply is the end of spontaneous sex. And by spontaneous, I mean in a context where they both know the answer is yes. It's also a way, as I say, of harming men deliberately done to harm men. If you want to know nihilism, this is a perfect example of nihilism, of destruction for its own sake. They are not trying to foster the safety of the women. They want to foster the destruction of the men. And what happens to women? These professors couldn't care less, except if they can get a chance to rape them themselves and then intimidate them that the grade will go down. Oh, yes, I've seen that happen. I've seen that happen a number of times. I've seen that happen so often that in some colleges, professors are forbidden to have the door open when they're seeing a student because the administration knows the percentage of professors who will leap at the student once the door is closed. Now, I assume there are better colleges, but I've never met them. Now, here's a question. I will defend until I die people's right to earn and spend as much money as they can on material goods. But hasn't materialism gone too far in that most people care much more about their cars, their clothes, and all the stuff they want to buy instead of caring about art, culture, reading, and intellectual pursuits? Do you agree that this is no good? Well, it's no good in the sense that these people are missing out on the ideas that are shaping their society, their future, their life, their child's education, etc. In that respect, they are missing a great deal. Not by being so interested in clothes and cars, but by being non-interested in things which are even more crucial to the direction of human life. But now, why does this happen? Why don't Americans care about art and culture and reading and intellectual pursuits? The problem is not them. The problem is what they are offered as art, culture, reading, and intellectual pursuits. What decent person is going to want to spend his time reading a Heidegger and studying the fabulous displays in the Museum of Modern Art and looking at Jackson Pollock's smears that he tosses at a wall across the room, etc.? It's much, much, much more healthy to collect little cars, to overwhelm yourself with clothes. At least you're getting something of value. I explain the problem then as not the American are defective, not the material goods that are defective, the fact that anything else has been made unintelligible or the vehicle of something evil. So the better people, which means most in this connection, shy away from it and stay away from it. There's a wider issue here. Americans do not take as many theoretical courses in college as the same percentage in other countries. The best Americans go into material professions like business or engineering, where they can understand what they're doing and where they can achieve something. America's best minds have escaped culture, even though their interest is in minds and the use of their minds, because they take one look at the culture and they are sick to their stomach. Understandably. And that, of course, is a great virtue on the side of a great help on the side of the entrenched culture, because the good people opt out, are self-removing, and the irrational have no opposition in taking over. If you want to know more about Ayn Rand's philosophy, I invite you to ask me a question. I can't answer them all, but I do read them all. Just write to leonard@peekoff.com. And if you haven't already done so, start by reading Ayn Rand's two most important novels, The Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged. And I might add that it wouldn't hurt you to read my latest book, The Dim Hypothesis.